Welcome to the podcast where we delve into the darkest corners of the Midlands, uncovering chilling tales of crime. From the bustling streets of Birmingham to the serene landscapes of Derbyshire, we're on a mission to unravel the mysteries behind these shocking murder cases. So if you're ready to explore the who, what, and why behind these jaw-dropping cases, then stick around. This is Midlands Murder Files. The following story contains details of violence and sexual assault, which may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. This week, our story takes us to Telford, a fast-growing modern town in Shropshire, nestled approximately 30 miles northwest of Birmingham. Named after Thomas Telford, a renowned civil engineer who played a significant role in the Industrial Revolution, Telford was established in the 1960s and 1970s as part of a planned expansion programme to alleviate housing congestion in nearby cities. The town is known for its modern architecture and well-designed urban planning with numerous green spaces and recreational facilities. It's December 2004, as Band-Aid 20's remake of the festive classic Do They Know It's Christmas dominates the charts, and the Polar Express enchants audiences as the number one film at the box office. The football world sees Chelsea soar to a 5-point lead in the Premier League, guided by the fresh leadership of a young Portuguese coach named Jose Mourinho. I wonder what ever happened to him. On the evening of December 26, also known as Boxing Day, 14-year-old Amy Williams was enjoying herself at a family party in Telford's Sutton Hill area, thrown by her uncle. She didn't have a care in the world. She was just soaking up the fun and laughter with her loved ones. Amy was a fun-loving and warm-hearted teenager. Her heart was set on a future as a teacher, inspired by her time doing work experience at a nursery as part of her child development studies at school. But there was more to Amy's story. She was also 6 months pregnant. While the news may have caught some by surprise, her family had embraced this, and Amy was eagerly anticipating the journey into motherhood. Amy decided to leave the party and head home at around 9 p.m. that evening. She informed a family member that she was leaving alone, reassuring them with the words, "Tell Mum, I'll be alright." A short while later, CCTV footage captured Amy walking through the Southgate area of Sutton Hill. She was dressed in the same clothes she wore to the party, a pink tracksuit, white t-shirt, and white Kappa trainers. Later that evening, Amy's mother Jane returned home from the party to find Amy was not there. Assuming Amy had gone to stay with James, her boyfriend and father of her unborn baby, Jane went to bed believing Amy would return in the morning with no cause for alarm. The next morning, around 9 a.m, a pensioner was paying a visit to his late wife's grave at St Michael's Church in Madeley, just over a mile away from Sutton Hill, when he noticed something peculiar in the distance. Resting on one of the benches within the cemetery, there appeared to be an unusual object. Promptly, he alerted a nearby gravedigger, sharing his suspicion that there was a discarded doll on the bench. Together, they walked over to investigate the matter further. But upon reaching the bench, their initial assumption was shattered. To their absolute horror, they realised it wasn't a doll at all. It was something far more sinister. There, sat on the bench, was the near-naked body of a young girl, wearing nothing but a pair of pink socks. The police were alerted, and they arrived on the scene almost immediately. The churchyard was cordoned off and closed to the public, while officers commenced their investigation. In the meantime, Amy had still not returned home, and her mother reported her missing later that morning. No one had seen or heard from Amy since she left the party, including her boyfriend. With the body discovered just over a mile away from Amy's last known movements, and a missing person matching the deceased's description, the police contacted Amy's parents and informed them of the discovery. Amy's father, Mark, had been separated from her mother, Jane, for a long time. Despite this, the pair remained friends due to living in close proximity to each other and having two daughters together, it was agreed that Mark would be the one to identify the body. Jane, who was understandably too upset to even comprehend the thought that it could be her daughter, entrusted this task to Mark. Sadly, the family's worst fears were realised when Mark identified the body found in the churchyard as his 14-year-old daughter Amy. A post-mortem later indicated that Amy had been strangled, but there was no obvious sign of sexual assault. Police were now trying to determine whether Amy was killed in the church grounds or whether her body was just dumped there later. An incident room was set up at the scene, with over 60 officers working on the case. More than 20 officers conducted a fingertip search of the grounds, while others made house-to-house inquiries and dog handlers searched the nearby woodland. On Wednesday the 29th of December, Detective Chief Inspector Dave Morgan, who was leading the murder hunt, issued a statement to the media, pleading for anyone who may have information about Amy's whereabouts during the 12-hour black hole between her leaving the party and the body being discovered to come forward. Amy was a vulnerable young girl with a whole life ahead of her, and for her to be killed in this manner was a shocking and despicable act, he said. Those 12 hours are currently a mystery. It is vital that we piece together what Amy was doing and who she was with during those 12 hours. Detective Inspector Andrew Parsons also encouraged local residents to be on the lookout for Amy's missing clothes and house keys. She was partially clothed when she was found, and we are particularly keen to hear from anyone who may have seen the clothing described, he said. We would ask people to check their gardens, hedges, and even dustbins in case her clothing has been left there. The following day, Amy's father Mark and her sisters Kelly and Katie made an emotional appeal at a news conference. Someone has taken her away from us and left her for dead in a cold churchyard, Mark said. Our whole family has been devastated by Amy's death, and we are in shock at what has happened to her. We cannot believe she is gone, and we will never see her again. She was a bright, happy girl who everyone liked, and she had a whole life in front of her. She did not deserve this. If you know anything, please call the police. Later that day, Detective Chief Inspector Morgan confirmed that Amy's boyfriend had been interviewed following the discovery of the body. However, he stressed that James was being treated as a witness to help build up a picture of the teenager's life and movements on the night she died. Following the plea from her family, West Mercia Police released a statement the next day confirming that a 27-year-old man had been arrested in connection with Amy's murder. He was detained for questioning for the next 2 days before being released without charge. Unfortunately, this incident cast a shadow over the Sutton Hill community due to the close-knit nature of the area, where residents are described as living in each other's pockets. The suspect's identity was broadcasted around the area, leading to vigilantes smashing the door and windows of his home. Following his release from custody, the man had to leave the area and stay with relatives. Meanwhile, the police were still actively pursuing other leads. Although they were still unable to find Amy's clothing, forensics had managed to submit what they believed to be a DNA sample from the killer, retrieved from a patch of saliva found on Amy's upper body. However, with DNA testing not as fast as it is today, they would need to play a waiting game for the results. In an effort to jog people's memories, West Mercia Police also released the aforementioned CCTV footage capturing Amy's last known movements. Wearing the pink tracksuit, white t-shirt and white Kappa trainers that the police were still desperately trying to find, Amy was pictured walking towards her home, just minutes away from where she was last seen in the footage. The timestamp on the footage was recorded as 10:31 p.m, although the police were unsure about the accuracy of this due to the belief that Amy had left the party much earlier in the evening. Nevertheless, at least they were able to ascertain that Amy was still alive and well at this time. On the same day, it was announced that a second arrest had been made. This time, a 28-year-old man, again from the same area as Telford. This individual was reported to be a friend of Jane, Amy's mother. Initially uncooperative with questioning, and due to a lack of substantial progress during the first 36 hours, officers were forced to request a 36-hour extension to his detainment to try and make a breakthrough. Eventually, the man was released without charge after being in police custody for nearly 4 days. Despite the setback of the two arrests, West Mercia police remained confident. Officers were eagerly awaiting the results of the forensic tests that they believed would lead to a breakthrough in the investigation, set to arrive the following week. Meanwhile, they had also uncovered further CCTV footage, which was released to the media. This time, the footage showed a man who was seen about a minute before Amy and was spotted by the same camera. He was walking in the opposite direction to Amy, so it was likely they would have seen each other. Police urged him to come forward so he could be eliminated from inquiries. Then, on Friday the 14th of January, 19 days after the incident, a monumental breakthrough shut the investigation to its core. The DNA sample, obtained from the saliva found on Amy's upper body, had returned a match. A 42-year-old man from the Sutton Hill area of Telford. The man was on the National DNA database after receiving a conditional discharge in 1999 for possessing an offensive weapon. He was arrested at his home the following day on suspicion of murdering Amy. This time, due to their confidence in having apprehended the perpetrator, the police were prepared to exercise patience. Interviews progressed slowly but steadily during the early stages. A magistrate granted a warrant of detention on Sunday afternoon, allowing officers to question the man for a further 36 hours. Eventually, he admitted to being with Amy on the night of her death and provided a detailed account of what had happened. On Monday, 17th of January, West Mercia police announced that the 42-year-old man had been charged with the murder and sexual assault of Amy. The following day, the identity of the man was revealed to be Philip Raymond Powell. After he appeared at Telford Magistrates Court, during the hearing, he spoke only to confirm his name, address, and date of birth before being remanded in custody. So what happened on that fateful Boxing Day evening? Well, Powell pleaded guilty to both offences and then provided a full and candid account of the events when he appeared at Stafford Crown Court in May 2005. Powell had been at his son's house and was walking home, but he had decided to stop to get some fish and chips en route. During this detour, he walked past Amy. Powell admitted that he recognised Amy from the local area, but they did not know each other. Fueled by what he described as sexual desire, he approached Amy and grabbed at her clothing to attract her attention. When she turned around, Powell said, "Come with me," and he put his arm around her. A clearly frightened Amy pleaded with Powell, saying, "Don't hurt me, I'm pregnant." But he forced her to walk with him for over 30 minutes until they arrived at the church. The court heard that this was the same church where Powell's children had been baptised, and not only that, where his wife told police, wait for it, the couple had had sex in the churchyard some years previously. The pair sat on the bench in the churchyard, and despite the sub-zero temperature, Powell ordered Amy to take her clothes off and forced her to perform a sex act on him. Afterwards, the realisation hit Powell. He started to worry about what Amy might tell other people, especially as she was certain to recognise him, as he had with her. He didn't want anyone to find out about his depraved behaviour, so he took one of the laces from Amy's shoes and proceeded to strangle her with it. Amy died from pressure to her neck, causing a shock in her heart. The court was told that Powell, a jobless labourer, led an exceptional existence, spending his time looking after his disabled wife, watching TV, and going for walks. He had also previously attempted suicide 3 times due to problems with his marriage. However, this failed to elicit any sympathy. Mr. Justice Wakeley told Powell, "You terrified a young girl whom you happened to see going home. Your mind was on one thing, and that was sex. On that cold December night, he terrified her into taking her clothes off. The sexual indignities which followed amounted to rape. Then, fearing she would identify you, he killed her. Amy was obviously pregnant. You took that young life, and the sentence for murder to which you have pleaded guilty is fixed by law as one of life imprisonment." Powell was jailed for a minimum of 30 years. This means now, in 2024, it will still be at least another 10 years before Powell will be considered for parole. Speaking outside court, Detective Superintendent Mick Brunger, who led the investigation for West Mercia Police, said he and his team were extremely satisfied with the sentence. The murder was an awful, cowardly crime against an innocent and vulnerable young girl, he said, adding, Powell fled the scene, leaving Amy for dead, and was clearly hoping he would evade capture in the days that followed. In the following months, two of West Mercia Police's forensic investigators, Lee Parks and Glenn Chad, were awarded the Chief Constable's commendation for their work on the case. The wintry conditions made the collection of DNA samples very difficult, yet their work was critical in identifying the killer and bringing him to justice. Amy's memory continues to be cherished by her family and the local community, who have lovingly installed a memorial plaque at the school where she was a pupil before this horrific event. As we conclude this harrowing account, we reflect on the tragic loss of Amy, a young girl with a whole life ahead of her, and the relentless pursuit of justice by West Mercia Police. The brutal and senseless nature of her murder shook the community to its core, leaving scars that may never fully heal. Losing a loved one at Christmas time, especially in such horrific circumstances as Amy's case, is unimaginably painful. The Christmas period, typically a time of joy and togetherness, becomes marred by grief and sorrow. The senseless loss of a young life, coupled with the brutality of crime, amplifies the anguish felt by family, friends, and the wider community. But of course, it's not just about Amy. Another life was taken that day, and she missed out on being able to see her baby's first Christmas. Her parents missed out on seeing their grandchild's first Christmas. And that just makes this case even more upsetting when you think about the longer term implications of what happened. So what did you think about this week's case? How did it impact you? What do you think about the 30-year sentence imposed on Philip Powell? I'd be delighted if you could leave your thoughts on this case on the Instagram thread associated with this episode. I'll do my best to reply to every comment that is left on there. And I'd also appreciate some general feedback on the podcast itself and your thoughts on the structure and the content. At the moment, I'm just starting this journey, so any feedback is good feedback. And I appreciate everybody that has taken the time to listen to this episode and will listen to any further content that I put out. I'm going to try and do one case per week. They will all be focused around the Midlands area. And I would love to hear suggestions on any cases that you would like covered, albeit whether it's an interesting case or it's from your local area, or even if it's just something close to your heart. Please just send me a direct message on Instagram at Midlands Murder Files and let me know what you'd like me to cover, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thank you again for listening. See you soon. Thank you all for tuning in to this episode of Midlands Murder Files. If you enjoyed the show, I would really appreciate it if you could consider leaving us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast platform and following us on Instagram for further content. Join us for the next episode as we continue our journey through the mysteries of the Midlands. Thanks for being part of the story. Until next time.